are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
But the year that the Brewers had the best pitching they ever had, by the time the Brewers got to the playoffs, all of those pitchers were pitching terribly.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
But I guess you just want to win, you know, the game you're in. You don't worry about the next day because if they lose a Kluber start, they're pretty much done.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
This is two recording sessions that you and I have flown solo here.
Yeah, it's a little different, you know. It's the off season, you know. People are being a little bit lazy.
They'll come back to us.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 165 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how you doing?
Good. This is two recording sessions that you and I have flown solo here.
Yeah, it's a little different, you know. It's the off season, you know. People are being a little bit lazy.
I think they'll come back to us. I really do. We'll be all right. We're lonely now, but they'll come back to us.
Yeah, I'm sure Eli and Darius will make their way back to us eventually. Darius had some busy stuff in his real life world, and Eli is working like 60, 70-hour weeks right now. So they'll definitely hopefully be back next week. And, you know, we're creeping along. It is game one of the World Series has finished yesterday. Game two, hopefully, will play tonight, depending on weather. Did you watch game one?
I watched all of game one. I was rooting for Corey Kluber. I'm a Corey Kluber fan. I like the fact that, you know, he had his Cy Young year. He didn't try to max out a contract. He signed a relatively team-friendly deal that was also a decent deal for himself right away. That seems sensible to me. I like Klubot, so I was happy for that, and I'm also happy because I still think the Cubs are a big favorite in the series. I'm also happy that we're going to at least see five games in the World Series.
Do you think that the Cubs are still the overwhelming favorite? Because I know Vegas had them going off at like 2-1 odds coming in.
You know, I do still think that the Cubs are by far the better team, and they have a starting pitcher advantage. You know, I just the one thing that the Indians are threatening to do here is they're threatening to try and replicate, the bullpen system that the Royals perfected for a couple years in the postseason. And so, I mean, I think they're overusing Andrew Miller, and I've thought that, you know, from the get-go, and there were little signs that maybe there's some chinks in his armor going forward. I mean, I just keep wondering to myself, can you pitch a guy, you know, 2 2/3 or, you know, 2+ innings in, you know, basically 3 straight series kind of thing. So that's kind of what I'm interested from a theoretical standpoint, if we're going to start to see these relievers start to break down. I don't know if you thought about that as well.
I think in a short series you can get away with it. I think we did see a little bit of a kind of a chink in the armor in terms of Andrew Miller's usage last night, and I was a little surprised they used him for as many pitches as they did. I mean, I believe he threw 45 in 2 innings, which would make you assume that he may be unavailable coming into tonight, which is a game in which Trevor Bauer is pitching and only lasted 2/3 of an inning because of the cut on his pinky finger from the drone accident he had before the game against Toronto. So, I mean, you got to think that there is a still likelihood that Bauer can't make it through because of health reasons, much less his own propensity to blow up, in that it could turn into a bullpen game. And now you've just given up your best relief arm the night before. So it was a little interesting that you didn't see Shaw come in or someone else from the bullpen come in, especially as the pitch count started to raise. But I guess you just want to win, you know, the game you're in. You don't worry about the next day because if they lose a Kluber start, they're pretty much done.
You know, I guess I thought to myself, the first thing that came to my mind is they could have cut those innings in half by asking Kluber to get through another inning, which, you know, the broadcast kind of hinted that, you know, they're trying to bring back Kluber on relatively short rest, so they didn't want to use him more than they had to. But at the same time, you know, it just seems to me like if you had gone to the mound with the way Kluber had pitched to that point and said, you know, hey, Corey, you think you can get through another inning without too much more, you know, too much more damage to yourself or whatever, it just seems like he would have bucked up and tried to get through that inning. Giving up a hit after being dominant for most of that start did not seem like a reason to pull him to me. That's where I thought the goofiness was. I thought they, you know, I realized because of exactly what we're talking about now. I mean, now that you get to the, you know, you get to the Merritt and you get to the, you know, I don't know, Merritt, Clevenger, Bauer, you know, partial Salazar starts or whatever, you know you're going to need him for long innings then. Mm-hmm. So I thought they were going to lean on Kluber for a few more outs last night. That's what I thought was going to happen, and they completely did not. So we'll see. Terry Francona as a glimmering history of figuring out how to work these things out. So we'll see if he's right or not, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to kind of believe in Francona's ability to manage, especially, you know, considering he's already won two World Series in Boston. So, you know, I want to believe in him. And as much as the Cubs are a great young team and haven't won a World Series in 108 years, I really believe that that the Cubs will be back a number of times. Like, this isn't like the only shot that the Cubs have. This could be the only shot the Indians have.
Oh, I think it's likely the only shot the Indians have. And while I do think that the Cubs are going to be a playoff team, at least for the next few years, I sort of consider this postseason to have been the perfect storm for the Cubs. I think all of the teams in the playoff pool were significantly undermanned. They had issues going into the playoffs. They either stumbled in or they didn't have two or three of their starters. And you look at the Cubs and they have all of their starters. You know, the only person they were really missing is Schwarber. And we saw last night that he came back in at least a limited role. So to me, this is the perfect storm, and this is the season they should cash in. And then after this, then the chips fall where they may. I mean, if the Hayward contract keeps going downhill or whatever, everyone, no one will even say anything about it if they cash in their chips this year. That's how I feel about it.
See, and I kind of feel the opposite about the Cubs, and we're, you know, totally off topic because we were going to talk mostly fantasy players, but I just think this is interesting. I think it was almost the perfect storm on the other end of the spectrum in terms of, like, the Cubs have played their worst baseball of the entire season in the playoffs. You know, I think while, you know, maybe they have gotten a little bit lucky to be where they're at, I think that they have hit this just slump, you know, in terms of especially some of their star hitters not being able to hit the ball. I really thought that everything had been stacked against them, and then they've kind of overcome this kind of wretched offensive performance. And, you know, because, I mean, I do agree with you that it seems that the competition in the National League was much weaker than it probably should have been. You know, as a Giants fan, I look at just what the Dodgers did. I look at what the Nationals did, and how close we could have been to a game five against the Cubs. And I'm like, man, this was ours for the taking.
You know, I mean, look at, you know, the Dodgers missing Kazmir and their Korean pitcher and Brett Anderson. I mean, granted, those were kind of shaky investments to begin with. I'm not saying that they weren't, you know, but, you know, them having basically Kershaw, then you look at the Nats, you know, basically had Scherzer. You know, they didn't really have any, you know, Joe Ross had gotten hurt. They didn't have Strasburg, you know, and you look at the Giants bullpen was in utter shambles. like by the time the postseason started, you know, because of Casillas' ineffectiveness and because of them having to lean so hard on Romo just to get through the final weeks of the season, et cetera, and so forth. Probably a situation you know better than me. You know, that's just an outsider perspective. But, you know, I just, you know, and then like now they're facing the Indians. Can you imagine how different this series would be if the Indians had a fully healthy Carlos Carrasco or a fully healthy Salazar?
Yeah. I mean that's the reason I picked the Indians to make it to the World Series in March. And it's because I went, okay, this is a playoff team. And one of the things I've, you know, noticed over the course of the last, you know, 5 to 10 years is the team with the best pitching rotation at the top of the rotation tends to win the World Series, or tends to make it to the World Series. They don't necessarily always win the World Series, but they go far in the playoffs. You need, you know, if you have three strong pitchers at the top of rotation, you're looking good. And I went, man, Carrasco, Salazar, and Kluber could be really killer in short series in the playoffs where pitching is really amplified. And so I was like, I'm going to take Cleveland. And then, you know, a month before the end of the season, I'm looking, well, they still have Kluber at least. But I didn't think there was any way they were making it to the World Series.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I guess it can be looked at both ways because you're definitely right. This is about as bad as the Cubs can play. But I feel like part of we're just approaching it the same thing in a different way, because if they had played this bad and the National League teams were at full strength, I don't think they'd be where they are, which is kind of is sort of what you're saying, is that the Cubs are played. It's a perfect storm. So the Cubs have played horribly, but they've actually made it.
Yeah.
And, you know, horribly for them, you know, they're still an incredibly talented ball club. I mean,
but I mean, if you load it on paper, they should have swept virtually every series they were in this postseason.
Like, yeah,
you know, on paper, they were, you know, easily the favorites coming in to every series.
And, you know, I mean, I look at it, and this is going to be kind of a homer perspective, but the year that the Brewers had the best pitching they ever had, by the time the Brewers got to the playoffs, all of those pitchers were pitching terribly, except for Gallardo, which was the former version of Gallardo who was good. You know, everybody, Zach Greinke was terrible. You know, Sean Markham was terrible. Everybody was pitching terrible, or, you know, recovering from injury, et cetera, and so forth. And so to me, I always look at it like this long campaign, this marathon race. You get to the end, if you have your guns still firing good bullets, you know, it's time to take advantage. And, you know, Lester is still good. Arrieta's a little bit shaky, but Hendricks has been out of this world. It's like, you know, Lackey has all that experience to fall back on. You know, you got the right bullpen to, you know, bullpen strong enough. Like, cash this bad boy in. I'm not a Cubs fan, but, you know, at the same point, I don't want to watch the same fan base suffer for, I don't think they should suffer for 150 years straight. So if the Cubs, you know, they pull it off this year, so be it. I'm not going to have any issues with it. But I think this is their year to cash in. And next year at this time, maybe they look like they're the best team, but they have two or three of their starters out, and then that changes everything.
Yeah, I mean, I have no dog in the fight. I didn't bet on either of these teams to win the World Series. Like I said, I mean, I bet on Cleveland to make it to the World Series in March, but that came true, so I'm totally cool with that. I made my money. I look like the smartest man of all time. I have no real dog in the fight. But like I said, I think the Cubs have a legitimate shot to win 3 or 4 World Series over the next decade, and I don't believe that about the Indians. I think the perfect storm has been what the Indians have been able to do all season long, especially in the postseason in spite of the injuries. And so, to me, they seem like the team of destiny that only has this window. And so, for me, I would like to see the Indians win because they've been waiting a long time, too. And I don't think they've got another opportunity coming after this season. But let's move in and talk about some fantasy baseball. And I wanted to start this episode a little bit differently. I wanted to kind of bring up some topics that relate to 2016, before we talk about, you know, a few players for 2017. And so we're going to do a little bit of a retrospective. We're gonna look at kind of a couple things that went right, a couple things that went wrong, and we'll start with what went wrong. And I want to ask you, Chuck, what was your biggest mistake this season?
Well, I've heard on other broadcasts and such that there turned out to be kind of a starting pitcher trap this past season. And my tried and true formula of having enough pitching definitely got kicked back in my face. In so much, and this was really, really productive for me to look back and try and make an overview of what happened in my season. And what happened for me is that the back of the first tier starters that I targeted were the likes of DeGrom and Greinke and Carrasco. And then I was going to back that up by having a strong, picking somebody at the top of the second tier. And those guys for me were Keuchel and Hamels and Archer. And when you put a combination of those two people, those two pitchers together, whatever one you want, you know, DeGrom, Archer, Greinke, Keuchel, whatever, however you want to make it, you end up really, really in a bad spot. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely, 1,000% what happened to me in the leagues that I did not fare well in this year. So that was how I stumbled for sure. How about you?
Well, I mean, first I'd like to comment on that because I mean that was going to be mine. I'm going to talk about another one since you brought that one up, and I can just kind of reply because I had the same issue, you know, with different guys, which tells you exactly what the landscape of pitching was. You know, David Price, Matt Harvey, Garrett Cole, Zach Greinke, Chris Archer, Carlos Carrasco. I traded for Steven Strasburg. I picked Garrett Richards to win the AL Cy Young. So, I mean, I was hugely invested in him. Luis Severino, hugely invested in him. My pitching was in shambles the majority of the year. And what I thought was part of the issue was, you know, there was a prevailing thought within the industry that this was the year to draft pitching early and often. You know, we talked about it in the preseason that, you know, you really wanted to get two of those top 20, you know, depending on, you know, what your top 20 worked out. And that turned out to be a disastrous strategy. And so, like, I thought, like, you know, when I first thought about this topic and I was going to say, you know, the pitching as well, I really thought about, you know, the only league I won this season was a 12-team mixed league. And so, and it was in a league in which I did not prioritize pitching because it was so shallow that I really felt like there would be pitching available on the wire. But, you know, the two or three other leagues that I did really well in and cashed and almost won were both AL only and NL only, like 12-team AL and NL only in league, you know, so leagues in which I did prioritize pitching. I just got lucky in terms of the pitchers I prioritized in those leagues. Pitching definitely hurt me and probably was the major reason for some of my struggles this season in the leagues that I did struggle in. But since you kind of brought that up, I think I'm going to talk about something that not everybody will kind of identify with, but some people out there will. I was in too many leagues this year. And, you know, it's something that people have made fun of me for the last couple of years in terms of how many leagues I play in. And this year, it really caught up to me. Last year, I was in 16 leagues. This year, I was in 17 leagues. I think had I been in 12 leagues, I would have won 50% of those leagues. But I had a hard time keeping up this year. And part of it was I went back to school. Part of it was the amount of workload that goes into Friends of Fantasy Benefits and now at Fangraphs. But my allocation of my own time became an issue for me. And so that's something that I really have to address going into next season is I can't say yes to every league offer. You know, I can't spread myself too thin. And as much as I love playing fantasy and playing in a ton of leagues, so I get a huge, you know, list of players that I'm rooting for and rooting against. And I really put myself in a position where I hurt my overall bottom line at the end of the season because I was in too many leagues for me to handle with my life workload as well.
Yeah, that's not a foreign that's not a foreign thing I hear out of people who run podcasts and people who work in the industry. I decided a few years back, I was in 9 leagues one year, and I thought it really hurt my performance in like 3 or 4 of them with as busy as my outside life is, running a business, etc. And so I've decided over time that less can be more. And so, you know, I'm all the way down to 5 leagues, and I'm okay there. I'm not searching out other opportunities. It would take a special opportunity that I thought was not going to significantly add to the workload to me to add another team. So I can certainly see, I can't fathom. I was at 9 and I can't fathom 16. And I know how busy you are from, you know, corresponding and doing work with you here. That just seems like an incredible workload.
And yeah, I mean, what happened to me was, being in the industry, and you know, last year nobody knew who Friends of Fantasy Benefits was coming into the season. I was invited into, I think, one industry league, you know, it was a fun experience. It was interesting to, you know, try out my chops against some of the industry guys. But this year, not everybody knows who I am. I'm not famous or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination, but a lot of people know who I am. And I was invited to a ton of leagues, you know, and I had a hard time saying no. And I did towards the end of draft season, where people were still asking me if I'd be involved in these industry leagues. But I joined so many industry leagues that I really stretched myself thin, and the hard part too is I was playing on so many different formats. So I was playing on Yahoo, I was playing on CBS, I was playing on Fantrax, and I was playing on ESPN.
And that's really difficult. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it really does. And I'm not a huge fan of Yahoo.
Well, the position eligibility is laughable.
Well, and aside from that, I just, for some reason, have never liked their mobile app.
Oh, okay.
I have a hard time. I would have won the Bay Area Fantasy League with who's in Lore Michaels and Howard Bender, our very own Mike Warner and Eli Rosenzweig finished second. They were half a point out, and I think I was about 8 or 9 points out. Had it not been for the fact that I forgot to set my lineup in that league a ton of times, I would have won that league. Yeah. And I kicked myself for it. And there was a number of leagues in which something similar, you know, things similar happened where I woke up late. I live on the West Coast because sometimes games start early. And I missed out on starts, and I missed out on guys who were being benched and things like that, getting out them in and out of my lineup, and that cost me. It cost me a ton of money, and it cost me winning some of these industry leagues. Going into next season, I will definitely have to reevaluate how many teams I can handle going into next year. So.
Well, the other thing that you could do is you could, when invited into some industry leagues or what have you, you could say, you know, would it be okay if I had, you know, one of the people that I work with at Friends with Fantasy Benefits get in the league instead? And then, you know.
And that's probably what I will do. I mean, one of the things about industry leagues that, you know, I mean, unless it's Tout Wars or Labor or CBS, no one cares.
I agree with you.
Like, don't get me wrong, like you know, the Bay Area Fantasy League was a lot of fun, and I'm gonna do it again because it's a live draft. Like, we all sit around a table and do it you know, in a bar at the Rec Room in San Francisco. And it was a really fun experience putting that together. I'm definitely going to do it again. But like, you know, some of these other ones, you know, I was in the Fake Baseball League. I was in Anthony Antiano's Rotoballer League. Like, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares. After you draft, like, and not necessarily, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, the people in the leagues care. They were very competitive leagues. But no one outside of the leagues care. And, I mean, the whole reason you do some of these is to kind of show off.
Sure.
And there's no real benefit to that.
And there's probably some, you know, there's some advantage to being able to, you know, make friendships and form bonds with other people mm-hmm. within the industry. I get that part of it as well. The one thing about it that's always odd to me is that anything that's not for money, I don't know how you feel about playing in leagues that aren't for money, but I'm, you know, unless there's some, you know, special prizes on the line, you know, I prefer to play in leagues for money. It seems to have people keep their edge better if there's some jelly beans on the line.
I think in terms of overall competitiveness and teams falling out of it and stuff like that, I think you have a point there, because you do notice, especially in some of these deeper leagues, because I play in I play in a few free leagues. I play in mostly money leagues, I don't mind just playing for pride. Because I'm super competitive no matter what. So for me, it's a matter, you know, the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, for instance, is free. You know, our staff, it's mostly our staff and some other people, that originally helped form Friends of Fantasy Benefits. And it's completely free. It's a 20-team Dynasty League, really deep rosters, and the only thing you get at the end of the season is you get a trophy, that I still need to send to our good buddy Aaron Bogey, who won the Dynasty League this year. So Aaron, if you're listening, that's on its way. I just keep forgetting. To me, I want to win. Like, don't get me wrong, I like money, and fantasy baseball has become very profitable for me, where I make a fair amount of money typically every year. But at the end of the day, like, I care about titles. Like, the money's going to go. I'm going to spend the money somewhere. And it usually, I roll it over to the next year and don't even pull it out of, you know, my PayPal or my league safe. I just roll it over for football and for baseball for the next season. Unless I win an obscene amount. So, like, the money, I don't really care about. For me, I want to win, and I want the bragging rights. I want to prove to my league mates and myself that I'm better than them. So I don't really care necessarily, personally, if it's a free league or a money league. To me, it's about the trophy, the banner, whatever you win at the end of the season, and the pride. Because I mean, I'm not playing in, you know, leagues that are $1,000 entry or $10,000 entry. You know, I'm playing in $100, $200, you know, buy-ins, things like that. So, like, the money isn't life-changing.
No, it's certainly, money certainly isn't life-changing. And I guess maybe my aptitude, I'm only in a couple of national leagues, nationwide leagues, and I'm in the local leagues instead. And so the money and maybe some keeper aspects and stuff sort of help keep people in tune a little bit better. So maybe that's where my slant comes on it.
No, and I mean, I think for a large amount of the population, that is true. I think most people who play in fantasy baseball, they look at their team, and if they're not in it in July, they just give up. Yeah. You know, they don't care, especially if it's a free league. You know, I can't tell you how many free leagues I've been in where people have stopped paying attention in May.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I've seen it numerous times as well.
Let's move on to the next topic. What was your best strategy that you employed this season?
Well, there's a common theme that you hear people say for leagues that have any keeper format. Or what have you. And that's that you either have to play for now or you need to try and rebuild. And unusually enough, I very successfully played the middle ground and managed to play for now and later in leagues that I couldn't win. I had the unique situation where a number of the leagues I was in had people who hit on everybody, and so they were way out in front. So I had a really good idea that I wasn't going to win those leagues. And so since the people were 25, 30, in one case 40 to 50 points out in front of everyone, what I thought I would do is I thought I would try and get younger for the coming years. And in every instance that I did that, I managed to cash in those leagues anyway. Now, you know, I don't get a flag to fly forever or what have you, but it definitely, you know, put a feather in my cap that I both have a better situation going into next year. I put a little money in the bank and cut some of my losses from this year. So I thought that was kind of an unusual situation. I even wrote down some examples. You know, in the middle of the season, I traded Jacob deGrom for Gregory Polanco and Dan Straley in one league. And Gregory Polanco did not pan out, but ironically, Dan Straley was probably better than deGrom. And then in one of the longest league that I'm in, that I've been in for 26 years, I decided that I was okay punting whip. And I managed to cash. You know, I kept Sean Manaea and Ian Snell and Daniel Norris on my roster, even outside of minor league spots, and managed to pick up Benintendi and Bregman, and I still cashed in that league as well. So that's kind of an odd answer to your question, but I don't know if you've ever heard anything like that, but that's how it worked out for me this year.
Well, I think that's really interesting because it really goes against the tenet of one of my big arguments in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, which is flags fly forever, I want to win, you know? And so, like, I'm not going to worry about next season. I'm not going to worry about five seasons down the road. I want to win a championship because that's all people remember. Nobody remembers who finished in second and all that. And so, you know, I'm a huge proponent of going all in when you have the opportunity to do that. So for you to play the middle ground and it still be profitable for you is interesting to me because it doesn't usually work out that way. And I think like a prime example of that for this season was in our Friends of Fantasy Benefits Staff Keeper League. Going into the last month of the season, the last two or three weeks of the season, there were four teams that were vying for a championship. And all with legitimate shots at it. I mean, I think at one point, all four teams in this 20-team Dynasty League were within, like, 3 points of each other in the roto standings. I mean, like, it was really, really any team could have won it. And all four teams chose to take that course that you did in terms of, then you know, we allowed trades all the way through the end of the season because it's Dynasty League. And all four teams just decided they were just going to roll with what they had. And that worked out for Aaron. But three teams could have won that league had they made some sacrifices for the future in terms of trading players away that were prospects or on like the DL for the rest of the season and refused to because they didn't want to give up their future. And didn't win a championship. And who knows if they will, you know? I mean, Matt, our very own Matt Thompson, he refused to trade Kyle Schwarber and other guys who were on the DL. I believe Josh, who used to write for us early on in when Friends Fantasy Benefits started, refused to trade away Matt Harvey. You know, I mean, you know, these guys were willing to hold on to the long-term pieces because they really wanted to win. And in terms of Matt, it's really backfired because not only was he not willing to trade away those pieces, he lost another piece right at the end of the season in Jose Fernandez, which is like the cornerstone of his pitching. And now he's in a real predicament where he has no pitching and probably won't compete next year at the same level that he had a shot at for this season. And so, like, for me, I always say you need to play to win now. I mean, you've got to, you know, I mean, I think it worked out for you, but I think your situation was the exception rather than the rule.
No, I generally agree with you. I just think in some instances, and like we say, this is not most instances, but in some instances you need to do a personal audit and say, okay, well, what is the best that my team can hope for against these other teams in the league? You know, and when, you know, I look at one team in one league and, you know, they've completely hit on Hendricks. You know, their fifth starter is better than my second starter. You know, they've got VR. They've got, you know, they've hit on three or four and they're running away with the league. I say, you know, how do I want to approach this from here on out? And, you know, and I definitely caught some breaks in the process, but I thought I could get younger and have a better chance to win this coming year. It happened to work out in those instances. I do think there's that stretch of time where you need to audit yourself and say, okay, well, you know, how much smoke and mirrors is going on right now for me to be where I am? And do I believe in the players I have through the end of the season? Or maybe is there a chance that I can try and get younger and not significantly hurt my team? And maybe the flag comes the following year, not this year.
And I think you bring up a really interesting point because, you know, in your scenario, you didn't have a chance to catch first place. And sure. So you had to kind of play that line. And I don't mind that because in the end, you are going for a championship. It's just next season.
Correct.
And it's something I've done before where first place or, you know, first and second place are so far out ahead. I'm still going to cash, but I've got a real opportunity to, you know, build a juggernaut for the next season. And I'll make that move. And I don't think people really evaluate in season, you know, kind of where they're really at within the standings very well, especially in roto leagues. I think, you know, in head-to-head leagues, it's really easy to see, you know, I'm 10 games out here, I'm 3 games out there, I'm 5 games up, you know, with this amount of many left to play. But I think a lot of the times, and I made the mistake in a league this season where I looked at where I was in the standings and went, you know, in July or something, and went, I don't really have a shot left in this league. And I really kind of made let that league take a back burner. And what I realized about a month later was, oh shit, I actually do have a shot. And I was in 12th place in July, and I ended up, really working hard for the last 2 months of the season, and ended up finishing in fourth. And had I had that extra month where I really, where I really kind of could have booked it and made some trades, and I probably would have been in the money. And it was just my, you know, like I said before, I was in too many leagues. I was stretched too thin, and I didn't pay enough attention to the kind of the details that I usually would. I had a hard time with what was my best strategy that I employed this season in terms of for myself. I want to kind of, you know, say it was almost the opposite of what you did, and it is the flags fly forever philosophy in terms of keeper and dynasty leagues. That's something I always adhere to. I make a push. I try to trade off assets, but in this year I was in the opposite kind of end of the spectrum in terms of my dynasty and keeper leagues where. I won a number of those last season. I was in rebuild mode this year, and I think I did fairly well to turn assets into better ones. And it wasn't necessarily that I rebuilt in a number of leagues. I'm only rebuilding in one league, and it's a long rebuild, and it's something I'm really interested to see how it's going to turn out because I'm not experienced necessarily in rebuilding. But in what I like to call reloading, I am. And that's where I feel like it's a short-term rebuild. So it's my team sucked this year, but I'm going to make sure it's great for next season. And I feel like I did a really good job in a number of spots. I was hit hard by injuries in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League. And so I made some moves in turning guys that, you know, have some upside, longer term upside, into assets for next season with really high short term upside. And I think I did a very good job of that, and that there are a number of leagues in which I will be competing in next year that I was probably mid-pack this season. Let's move on to the next topic, because, I mean, we are really chatting it up, and we both have limited time. So let's move on to what sleeper pick of yours did not pan out this season that you still believe in?
Well, I was torn between two, and since we're flying with just two of us, I think I'll mention them both quickly. The first one is one that I know we corresponded about at the beginning of the season, and that's Brandon Finnegan, who finished with a 3.98 ERA. He had 10 wins, hit 145 Ks in 172 innings, but he was significantly better after the All-Star break. And he had a couple of three-start stretches where he was really good, where he, you know, threw over 25 strikeouts and struck out less than five guys. So he's someone that I'm not out on yet. And the other one I wanted to mention is Byron Buxton, who was literally terrible other than the month of September when he hit 277 with a 340 OBP and seven home runs and 18 RBIs. It was really interesting that he hit .197 on the road this year, Byron Buxton did, with a far higher K rate than he had at home. So those were the two guys that I wanted to mention, Finnegan and Buxton. Buxton in most leagues and Finnegan sort of in deeper leagues.
Buxton is a guy that I agree with you. I mean, I didn't get a ton of shares of Buxton, but I was fairly high on him for the most part because I believed in the speed and the defense, and I felt like his defense would keep him in the lineup, and the speed would keep him relevant. It didn't work out that way, but he was a different hitter coming back after his demotion and towards the end of the season. And if he can hold on to some of those gains, I think he's a guy that could really bust out next year. Finnegan's a guy that I still believe belongs in the bullpen, you know, and I think he could be an elite closer. But I do believe his future is in the bullpen. I don't believe he is a starter or a top tier starter at any point long term. And so I think if we're going to get max value from him in real baseball terms and in fantasy especially, I think he needs to become a relief pitcher and a closer. So he's not a guy I'm necessarily on. I'll mention two guys real quick. One is a prospect that never made it to the big leagues, and then one is a player who was injured pretty much all of the year. I'll start with Bradley Zimmer, who I felt, and I was a little overzealous. I really thought he would make it to the majors this year, and he never did. And part of it was because of the success in Cleveland. But Cleveland traded away Clint Frazier. They traded away a lot of their future, but they held on to Zimmer. He is going to be a big part of that team, and I think that happens next season. He's 23 years old. He will be 24 going into next season. So, I mean, he's primed. You know, in Double A, hit 14 home runs and stole 33 bases, hit another one in Triple A and stole five more. You know, not amazing averages. He's a guy that I believe at some point in his career will be a 20-30 kind of player, and could be, you know, a 10-30 kind of player next season that will not be drafted in most formats. I really like Bradley Zimmer as a sleeper coming into next season, even though he never made it to the majors this year. The next guy that I'm going to talk about, and I don't even know if he what his health update is, so I'm going to stall as I look up his prognosis. But a guy that I was really high on, and I didn't understand why other people weren't, was Corey Spangenberg of the San Diego Padres, and that was because we didn't quite know how great second base and third base were going to be this year, and I thought he was going to offer some sneaky speed. So it looks like, I mean, more than likely he'll be fine coming in the next season. I think with what San Diego is doing, they will give him either second or third base job coming into next year. I think he is a guy that could steal a ton of bases on a team that likes to push it on the base paths. And I don't think anybody will have him on their radar next season. So he's a guy that I know he missed the entire season with the quad injury. He should be healthy coming in next year and plays on a good team for his skill set. All right. Let's move on and talk about what bust pick of yours did not bust, in that you will now believe in him coming into next year.
As far as I was concerned, my bust pick for this year was Francisco Rodriguez. I was concerned about him going to the Detroit bullpen, which seemed to have a curse upon it. Yet he had his best season in recent years. He was second in the American League in saves with 44. He only had 5 blown saves, and that was his highest saves total since 2008. And once you get to the mid-level to low-level closers, I think save total is probably what you're looking for, and that's where he could be had, was in the mid to late closers. So I think K-Rod was a lot better than I thought he was. He's got a lot of mileage in the bullpen these days, been around for a long time. And I still doubt he's the kind of player that I'm going to end up with next year, but he certainly surprised me this year.
All right. I mean, there's two guys that I could talk about. I'll mention them both briefly. I don't think there's a ton of analysis that needs to be given in terms of why I'll believe in them next season. It's pretty obvious because both will be first round picks and probably both will be top, five or six or seven picks. I did not believe in Mookie Betts and Bryant, Chris Bryant, the way I should have coming in the year. I was probably one of the lowest people in the industry on Mookie Betts. I think I was about on par with Chris Bryant, but he was a guy I was avoiding, for the most part, because I was worried about the strikeout rates. I was wrong on those guys. Fortunately for me, I believed in some guys that performed really well at the top parts of the draft. Around the picks that were going, I was a big proponent of Jose Altuve, and guys like him. So it didn't burn me too much, but I will not, I went back to the well, I've gone back to the well in years past with certain guys and said, I still believe this guy is trash. I still believe this guy is trash. And then I get burned again. I will not be doing that with Chris Bryant and Mookie Betts. They're studs that I missed on this year. Let's talk about a couple players and their future value. And I don't know if we'll get through all of them, but I definitely want to talk about a few of them real quick. And we'll start with Kyle Schwarber, because no player in the first game of the World Series boosted his fantasy draft stock higher than Kyle Schwarber did. It's kind of an amazing story considering what he's done in order to get back. He's missed virtually the entire 2016 regular season, reported to Arizona Fall League a couple days ago to prep for the ability to play in the World Series, comes in, has a nice day, and was a little bit of wind away from hitting a home run. The better he plays in the World Series, the higher his draft stock is going to go, in my opinion. So I wanted to ask you, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Kyle Schwarber for next year?
I think without catcher eligibility in most formats next year, that I'm really afraid of what Schwarber's role is going to be on that team next year. I'm trying to figure out what they're going to do with all the individual pieces that they have. It seems like they may even bring Fowler back. Even if they don't bring Fowler back, it seems like you need to get playing time for Baez. Zobrist is going to have to play in the outfield. Soler needs to play if they're going to use his value properly. Almora Jr. has played an important role, too, for him in the playoffs. I'm just worried about how he's going to play and where he's going to play, especially with first base locked up and catcher locked up for years to come. So I'm worried about him. I think he's going to sit versus lefties next year.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I was hoping that I knew you were going to be on the same page with me. So when I wrote this and I put him on the notes before game one had started. So I mean, I did not know he was going to have the breakout performance that he did. But one, I don't know where he's going to be catcher eligible. I think there may be a site that has him catcher eligible somewhere. Yahoo is the one that kind of jumps to mind as a place that is pretty liberal with their positional eligibilities. But a few years ago when Victor Martinez lost an entire season to ACL surgery, he also retained catcher eligibility the following season on CBS. These situations from Victor Martinez is a little bit different in terms of Victor Martinez did not play any games that season. Schwarber played a few. But I agree with you. To me, it's less about the eligibility, though that is important. Because if he has catcher eligibility, I think we start discussing it a little bit differently. But to me, he is such a bad defensive player and defensive liability. And they're not going to have a lot of places to put him. He has to play left field. He can't catch anymore after this injury, and I don't think they want him to catch anyways. So he's going to have to play left field, and he is going to be such a defensive liability. He's going to be pulled early from games. I think you're right. I think he probably will platoon. The Cubs have a ton of talent, and they're a team that can afford to go out and get more talent. And they've got more talent in the minor leagues. And I think that they will probably not bring Fowler back because they have so much talent. I think there's a chance they could move Soler via trade. But at the same time, I think you're going to see Schwarber in a platoon throughout the season. He'll sit against lefties. And then I think you'll see guys like Al Mora come in and replace him late in games when they're close. And I think that's really going to limit his upside if he does not have catcher eligibility. If he does, I still think he has some value, but probably not as much value as other people within the industry and in league. So he probably will not end up on any teams of mine. Let's talk about Jose Quintana. I want to get your kind of thoughts on him coming into next year. So what are your thoughts on Jose?
Well, I've always thought that Quintana is a good middle of the rotation kind of starter in fantasy who's been undervalued generally in drafts. This past year, he had two bad months, June and September. He had really weird splits where he had a much better ERA at home, which doesn't really make sense with the other parks in that division. You know, he had the lowest whip and the second highest K rate of his career. 27 years old. I guess to me his upside is somewhat limited by something that people don't like to look at, and that's that I kind of think that the White Sox are lost. Like I really don't understand what they're trying to do. They may end up trading Chris Sale in the offseason, which would hurt the team's upside more. So he's kind of not old and not young. He's had a lot of mileage on him. Quintana is a guy that sort of has to fall to me in drafts for me to have much interest in him, despite the fact that he's kind of trending in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I still think he's kind of an underrated guy. But I think the underratedness of him has kind of worn off a little bit. I think he's going to be much more highly regarded than he has been in years past. I think people will not take him for granted in the same way that they have. He was a little unlucky, I think, in terms of, some things. But at the same time, he plays on in one of the worst stadiums. I think there was a chance he could get traded. I can't imagine they would trade Chris Sale. But, who knows what the White Sox are doing? Because I think you're right. I think they are lost as an organization. So he's a guy that it'll, his value... He doesn't have a huge upside to me, but he's one of those guys that really can anchor rotation, and has really shown no signs of breaking down. So he's a guy that I think, you know, maybe the fantasy industry after last season will reevaluate and value guys like this that are workhorses that seem to just give you 200 innings every year with great statistics, and really give them a boost in value. But if they don't, I will, because I really like him, especially in quality start leagues. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about George Springer, because this is a guy that I've been extremely high on for a long time. My famous quote about that I would drink his bathwater last year was a running joke all season last season. And I never wavered coming into this year on how I felt about him. But it's time to really ask, is George Springer's name value higher than his actual value?
I think we're starting to get there. I think one of the misconceptions with people is going to be that George Springer is really young, which he's already 27. I also think, I don't like the trends for the running, 9 stolen bases and 10 caught stealings this past year. I mean, there's positive things to look at. 116 runs scored and 29 home runs. Even the .261 batting average, a lot of people feared a worse batting average for Springer than that. I guess I just think I have this tendency he's not going to end up on a lot of my teams because I'm going to try and cover the outfield early because I think that's the position that's going to be scarce at the end of drafts next year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest concern is his lack of speed. And it's not that he's not fast. He is. I mean, he's got good speed. I mean, this is a guy that I think was close to, hitting 40 home runs, stealing 40 bases in the minor leagues. And that's why a lot of people really liked his upside. But I think his placement in the batting order the fact that he ran into so many outs this year may limit him, his green light on the base paths. It's not that he doesn't have the ability, because he does. I think he could steal 20, 30 bags pretty easily in the major league level. But at some point, if he keeps running into outs and kind of running the bases so poorly, they're just going to say stop running, and focus on just hitting bombs and don't run into outs, because it hurt the Astros this year, in the times where he was picked off or when he was caught stealing. So it's not they're not going to let him continue to do that in the same way that we thought he would. And that to me really limits his upside, because for the most part, he's still being treated like a guy who could be a 30-20 guy or a 30-30 guy. And we saw that in our mock draft. I don't have exactly where he went, but he went way higher than he should. And this is a guy that I love. I love his skill set. I love his personality. I love him as a player. But I got a feeling that I'm going to get priced out on George Springer this year because people are still going to believe that upside that I don't know if is actually there.
Well, my wife and I played a who would you rather have game with Springer, and if you don't mind me changing roles with you for a second, I'll give you some guys and you tell me who you like more. How about George? Let's go really high. How about George Springer or Giancarlo Stanton?
Ooh. This one's really difficult for me because I'm really low on Stanton because I just, at some point you've got to look at him as a guy that only contributes in three categories, and really only two. So I think I would take Springer, but it has nothing to do with Springer. It has everything to do with Stanton.
Okay. Well, if you feel that way, how about our man George Springer or Ryan Braun?
I think I'd go Braun. I mean, I think Braun is safer, and honestly, I think he has just as much upside. you know? So, yeah, I think I'd have to go Brian Braun.
Okay, and how about George Springer or Christian Yelich?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I think it would depend on who I went with early on in a draft. And if I'm building a more balanced team, or if I have, power gaps or things like that. But I think I would probably lean Yelich.
Yeah, I guess I don't blame you. I think he's really tricky. The other one, and I purposefully made these tricky. The other one that I want to talk about is how about Justin Upton? Springer or Upton?
I'm going to go Upton.
So, yeah, there I would take Springer. For the most part, I agree with you. I'm not quite as out on Stanton as you are.
And I think like for me, all of those are really close. Except for I'm gonna go Springer over Upton. Except for the Stanton one, and I'm gonna be way low on Stanton compared to other people, because yeah. I think if it wasn't for the fact that Stanton has the name value with him, we'd be looking at Giancarlo Stanton as Chris Carter-esque.
Okay, I have a higher opinion of him going forward than that, but I certainly get that. But I also wanted to do that to just let people know that we have a tendency to envision next year as the first couple of rounds. And I just, like, if those names, none of those names really enthuse you, those are the outfielders that are going to be going in rounds 3 through 5. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like, if I can get somebody with dual eligibility, Chris Bryant, that helps me cover the outfield, that's going to be a strategy that I use quite frequently.
And I think to your point, I just pulled up the mock draft that we did, the industry mock draft that we did, and Springer went in the second round of a 15-team draft. Which to me is insane. He went way too high, because he went ahead of JD Martinez. He went ahead of AJ Pollock. But at the same time, you start looking at some of the names that went below him, and you can't really blame him, because I think you're right. I think there is a cream of the crop in the outfield, and then there becomes a really big bunching. I'm a big proponent that first base is the most shallow position, but I think there is a huge drop-off in the outfield as well. I just think there are guys, in the mid to late rounds that have some really interesting upside as well.
Sure, I can see that, and I always try to figure out, because, you have to draft – 2.5 times more outfielders than you have to draft any other position.
That's true.
And so I try to multiply that factor in my head and see where we're going to end up in the outfield. Mm-hmm. So I think if we go fast, I don't have a lot of things going on, and maybe you want to edit some of the stuff out earlier anyway. But the point being is that we can get through these last two players if you want.
It's going to have to be real quick. Let me throw Drew Pomeranz at you. What are your thoughts on him for next season?
I don't like the forearm soreness to end the season, and he had a 4.59 ERA after the All-Star break. You add in the fact that the AL East has really ugly ballparks to pitch in, and I'm kind of scared off of him, to be honest with you.
I think the end of his season was so disastrous that his value may drop tremendously. And if that happens, I'm willing to take a flyer on him. But there are some things to look at as red flags in terms of value for next season. And you just mentioned them. One is health. He pitched almost 100 more innings than he had previously in the previous season and pretty much in his career. And moving to Fenway from San Diego is going to be a huge issue. I think he has the stuff to pitch through that, but it's all going to be dependent on what his value is, the rest of the way. I'm trying to see if I can find him real quick in the mock draft, but I don't believe he had a very high pick.
A lot of people didn't believe him going into last year, so stumbling at the end of the year will probably help decrease his draft value. I just I noted too that when I looked him up, they announced that he's not going to need surgery on the forearm. But I don't know about you, but I hear forearm soreness, and in the back of my mind, I think UCL.
And he's had a previous Tommy John surgery to begin with. So, I mean, it's not like it's not like he isn't immune. I mean, he was a former top pitching prospect.
Sure.
Because of the Tommy John surgery and other issues, you know, being traded to Colorado didn't help. But, you know, he kind of fell off the map.
Yeah.
He went in the 17th round of a 15-team draft, 245th overall. I'd be over him all day at that position.
You really don't have much to lose there. Any pitcher you draft there is going to have warts, and you know, nothing to lose. That's as good a gamble as you're going to get there.
Yeah. So I mean, if that's where he's going in drafts, then yeah, I'm willing to take a shot on him. You know, probably five rounds earlier. Let's go ahead and move on. And we'll finish up real quick with Hernan Perez, your boy. You know, no one was he was talked about on another podcast. I think that I was on as a guest, and we just laughed, you know, as a group. And when I first introduced him on this podcast, the majority of us laughed as a group. You were one of the few people that really believed in him all season long. What are your thoughts on him for next year?
Well, I don't tap myself on the back too hard. I remember last year before the season started, I brought him up as a potential shortstop for the Brewers, and literally Eli, in his snarky voice, which I love Eli for it, but Eli literally said, "Can we not mention Hernan Perez ever again on this podcast?" And, you know, naturally I turned out to be right in this case, which, you know, we like to think about the times that we're right. But he did really stumble down the stretch. You know, it's hard to, with where you could get him last year, 13 home runs and 34 stolen bases, he hit over 270. I mean, anybody, including, you know, closest members of his family, would have taken that going into last year. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. I think he was not prepared to play that much, so there's a chance that I could overblow the fact, you know, it could be overblown that he struggled at the end of the season. But he's in the right situation to have a prominent role with the Brewers next year. I like the, like I mentioned before, I like to shore up the outfield every way I possibly can. So outfield and third base eligibility is right up my alley. So I think there's instances where I'll own him, but if people want to jump on him too soon, I'm going to let them take that gamble.
Yeah, I think I'm not as worried about kind of the tail off towards the end of the season, because I mean, this, it was a long year, and like, you know, you know, he's not a guy that, you know, had a ton of plate appearances in field time the previous season. So, I mean, he may have just gotten fatigued, as some players do. And when you're on a team that isn't very good, you know, things don't always work out the way. You know, to me, I think that the power isn't as legitimate as we saw this year. So I think he is a guy that will probably regress. But I also don't think he's going to be extremely highly drafted. You know, so I don't think he's a guy that you necessarily are going to have to take early on. And I think he's a guy that could still steal 30 bases, which has a huge amount of value.
And there's a very legitimate chance. I mean, it's the biggest topic amongst Brewer fans right now. There's a very legitimate chance that he starts every day at third, or starts every day at second, or starts every day at first. So the eligibility that you have already is probably going to grow. And, you know, and he can fill in. He's originally a shortstop. He was a shortstop in the Detroit organization. So he could fill in at short if something crazy happened and he needed to do that. So that part of it, you know, is something that I personally, especially in the kind of leagues I play in, you know, draft and hold, where you can't pick up free agents, where that can really save your tail through certain stretches of the season. But I also think it's undervalued in regular leagues, because if in the middle of the season he adds second base eligibility and that allows you to make a trade that you couldn't make otherwise, you know, in leagues where people trade a lot, I think that's an especially important thing to be able to look at long term as well.
Yeah, and I mean, in some formats, he will already have second base eligibility.
Sure, because so, 11 games at, I think it was 11.
He had 10 games at second. So, I mean, he's going to have second and third eligibility in some leagues already. And he probably will gain eligibility at second base at some point. And in some leagues, he may even have he'll already have outfield and third. So, I mean, you're looking at a guy who can kind of move all over the diamond. One of the reasons why Ben Zobrist was so valuable for a long time wasn't that he was so great. It's just you could play him at such kind of shallow positions.
And really, this stat line is a classic Ben Zobrist stat line. Mm-hmm. This past season. I mean, the reason that Zobrist was, you know, so highly touted for so many years was because of positional eligibility, some speed, and some power, which I agree with you. I mean, I will not be stunned. Anywhere between 8 and 16 home runs next year would not stun me when in full playing time. But more than 16 would stun me.
I think I'd probably be looking at him as a guy who hits – I think I'd probably project him for like 830. And anything I got above 8, I'd be stoked about.
Yeah. Well, we all know that in almost any league, I mean, even a 12-team league, you're going to find a person with positional eligibility. He gets you 8 home runs and 30 stolen bases with as few steals as there were this year. That guy has value.
Exactly. I think, and I don't think he'll be overvalued on draft day as well. Yeah. That is going to wrap us up. Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can be reaching and what you're working on?
Well, you always say that, and then I feel like I'm not really working on anything in particular, besides getting ready for the upcoming drafts and keeping up with everything that's going on in trade rumor circles, et cetera, and so forth. But I can be reached at Just Chucking It. Had a lot of really good baseball conversations long term this week on Twitter, and I always keep track of it. So feel free, if I say anything that sparks your interest, reach out to me, and I will certainly get back to you.
And you can reach me on Twitter, at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read anything I write for baseball on FanGraphs. Read my football stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Check out the football podcast. And don't forget to give us a rate and review on iTunes. We're going to be going all offseason long for baseball. So while all the other podcasts have disappeared, we will be going strong. So definitely continue to listen and tell a friend. So that will wrap us up, though. For Chuck and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Fall.